organizer, for inviting me to give a talk here. So, let me start with the content of this talk. So, first, a little bit of an introduction, very brief introduction to free probability. So, the definition and the main operatorial models for freeness. Then, linearizing and other relevant transforms. Of course, here the main thing is the R transform, but I'll mention a few other things. Maybe main point of interest for this conference, the connection between freeness and random matrices. And then, what will contain also a bit of new things, operator-valued freeness, connection with random matrices, so how operator-valued freeness can be used in analyzing some random matrices, and some limit theorems in operator-valued free probability. So, I should mention that all the new results that that will be presented here are part of still ongoing joint work with Mihai Popa and Viktor Vinnikov. Actually, what I will present here is already posted on archive. Okay, so let's start with what is freeness. And I don't know, maybe it's the wrong approach, but I thought that for people more inclined towards physics, maybe the clock space model would be a good point to introduce freeness. So let's take a Hilbert space H. By the way, at some points I will be deliberately vague to avoid some technical details. So please, if something looks fishy, ask a question. Don't hesitate about it. So we take a Hilbert space H of dimension strictly greater than 1 so that the phenomenon of freeness can actually appear. We take a non-zero vector in there, and we define C star of G as the left creation operator with G on the Fock space corresponding to H. So this is the vacuum vector. We consider omega to be of norm 1. And then here we have a direct sum of increasing tensors of increasing length. And then let's take C of G to be the adjoint of C star of G, but with respect to one specific inner product, which I'll call it for certain reasons, zero inner product on this Fock space, which is simply, well, making any two vectors of different length, let's say, perpendicular, and otherwise it just takes coordinate-wise product in H. So then C of G is the annihilation operator. And of course, the annihilation operator carries omega into z. Okay, then there is this relation reminding one of the canonical commutation relations. C of f, C star of g is just the scalar product fg times the identity operator on this free Hilbert state. There is a favored state that everybody seems to like, namely the vacuum state on the operator acting on this top space. So just phi of x takes x into the number obtained by x applied to omega, scalar product is omega. Okay, so now where is freeness coming in here? Well, it's coming out of perpendicular vectors in H. So of course, we consider them still to be non-zero. Then, the main observation here is that you can take A1 to be the star algebra generated by C, by creation and annihilation with V1, and A2, the star algebra generated by the operator creation and annihilation with V2. Well, then those two algebras are free with respect to the vacuum. Now, you can take this almost as a definition, in the sense that this model for freeness is an, in a certain way universal. So if somebody wants this as a definition, everything's fine. But let's see what the abstract meaning would be. So what's the abstract idea behind this dream? Well, roughly speaking, if you take x1 in a1, x2 in a2, well, then you can express the joint moments of x1 and x2 in terms of the moments of x1 and the moments of x2. There is a rule. Well, first, let's say specifically what moments are. So, if you take a word in x1 and x2, then you want to be able to express this phi of w, that is the joint moment w for w, as a polynomial, a certain polynomial, in phi of x1 to the power j1, phi of x2 to the power j2. Now, the point is that this j1 and j2 are, of course, bounded by the length of this word. Actually, you can say that you need as many j1s as x1 appear here, and the same for j2. Okay, that's just a word rule. How do you do it specifically? Well, it's one of those cases in which the definition gives you a method. So, this definition, due to Voiculescu, gives us the answer. So, if you take a unital star algebra A and the state phi, think about our previous setup, then the unital star subalgebras A1, A2, AN are free with respect to this state phi if the following algebraic relation holds. For any integer k, phi applied to the word A1, A2, also into AK, equals zero whenever the following conditions happen. You take A1 to be in an algebra which is different from the algebra from which A2 comes. A2 in an algebra different from the algebra from which A3 comes. And so on and so on. So A1 and A3 can come from the same algebra, but not A1 and A2. And in addition, you want that phi of each of these guys is zero. And this for j between 1 and k minus 1. Of course, you say that some elements are free if the algebras they generate are free. Now, okay, I'm not actually planning to really show you how this rule works, but just for the sake of intuition, let's look at the by far most trivial situation. If you take phi of A1, A2. If phi of A1 equals phi of A2 equals 0, then this one, of course, is 0. But if not, if these guys are different from 0, then the algebra being unital, you can just say A1 equals A1 with a certain on top minus phi of A1, I apologize, plus phi of A1 times 1. Now, of course, when you look at this thing, it's absolutely clear what A1 with a circle on top is, and it's also clear that phi of A1 with a circle on top equals 0. So, phi of A1, A2, then it's just phi of A1 plus phi of A1, A2 circle plus phi of A2, which when you do your computations and apply the definition for A1 and A2, just gives you phi of A1, phi of A2, as any probability theory should give. Yes? Oh, A1 circle is just what comes from here. So A1 circle is A1 minus phi of A1 times 1. Yes, it's the definition. okay, so that's just as a little tip. And you repeat that as many times as you need. Okay, so now let's talk about more models. The first one we have seen, full Fock space. Then the three group factors model. That was Voiculescu's motivating model. So if you take G to be the free product of U1 and G2 with amalgamation over the unit, not over anything else, and G1 and G2 be discrete groups, you take the left regular representation of G on L2 of G, of course, then the von Neumann algebra generated by this left regular representation in the space of operators on L2 of G happens to contain L of G1, so the von Neumann algebra generated by G1 inside G, and the one by G2 inside G. And then those two guys are free with respect to this trait, which is essentially the vacuum state from the previous case. And the interesting part here, random matrices, that was the big breakthrough of Poikulescu in 1990, finding that essentially, again, this is a bit vague, but we will come back to this later, independent large random matrices are asymptotically free as their size and 20. So, okay, now a bit of transforms. So, in classical probability, you have, of course, the Fourier transform, or the logarithm of the Fourier transform, which linearizes independent. So you take two independent random variables, Fourier transform, logarithm, you will have that the Fourier transform of the sum for those random variables is simply the product of the Fourier transform. Okay, now the equivalent here, the equivalent notion is the R transform. This is given not in terms of the moment generating function with factorials under, but just directly moment generating function. So we look at Gx of z simply to be phi of x to the power 0 over z plus phi of x to the power 1 over z squared, and so on and so on. That's what we have there. If we consider this x to be bounded, then of course this simply corresponds to phi of z minus x inverse, whenever this thing makes sense, for x, for example, of large epsilon value. And if we are looking here at the spectral measure with respect to this phi for x, this can be written as integral of 1 over z minus t, dx t. Of course, here I suppress the phi. So this one is phi of spectral measure of x. I just want to keep this on the blackboard. That's why I wrote it. So now Poikulescu in his founding paper in 1986 for bounded random variables, and then Berkovich and Poikulescu for unbounded self-adjoint random variables affiliated with a 2-1 factor, or I should say with a finite algebra, showed that if one takes the R transform defined this way, so Rx of z to be the inverse with respect to composition of Gx, of course this defined around 0 minus 1 over z, then x1, x2, 3 implies Rx1 plus x2 equals Rx1 plus Rx2. Yes?
Very clear. So, phi here is the integral with respect to the probability distribution.
Phi here is the integral, yes.
So it's not just the measure, it includes that integral size.
No, so here if we look at this in terms of random variables, phi is the linear function given by the integral with respect to the probability. Of course, if you have non-commutative algebras, then
Precisely. So on the third line, with respect to that arrow, that also includes the integral sign, right?
Operating
on 1 over z minus.
This includes everything. Okay. Now.
So this is like the Cauchy transform.
This is a Cauchy transform over here. The Cauchy transform of this layer. Or as probabilists prefer to name it, I think, Cauchy Stieglitz transform. I compromise on Cauchy Stieglitz.
Okay.
So now, if you look at Voigulescu's proof of the R-transform theory, of the R-transform theorem, then you see that he uses the Fox space model for that. Namely, he represents the variable x in terms of a random variable. Again, here that sum does not represent any convergence or anything. Don't expect that necessarily to converge. As a sum of creation and annihilation operators. Well, the point is that if you take that sum, then those alpha n's over there will give you the coefficients of the power series expansion around zero of this R, of this R transform. Of course, then you can do free additive convolution. It's the obvious thing. You take two probability measures, mu1 and mu2, construct their free additive convolution, you represent each of them as the distribution with respect to some state of two self-adjoint random variables, x1 and x2, and you put those self-adjoint random variables in a free position with respect to each other. For example, by representing them in the free group factor. Okay. So, of course, then this theorem translates into this. This is the main part I wanted to mention about the R transform.
If there are any questions about this. If this equality holds, these guys are free. Oh, wait. Yeah, that's a too long answer. No, you can't say that. Because there are... okay, if you put more conditions on these axes, if you make sure that they are self-adjoint, that the state is as it should be and all the rest, then, yeah. You know, you pile conditions on until they are almost free, and then you put that on and they are free. Yeah. But no, generally no, absolutely not. Okay, and other transforms, just very briefly to mention that, of course, if you can talk about addition of random variables, which are free, why not talk about multiplication? So, multiplication of random variables, remember, those guys do not commute, so that it gives you something, well, coherent, something nice, you want to consider either positive or unitary random variables. Then you can define free multiplicative convolutions for their probability distribution, either on the positive half line or on the unit circle. On the unit circle, you need no clarifications about it. But on the positive half line, what you use is this trace property. Let's see. I'll put it back up. So if phi, then what you use is that phi of xy equals phi of square root of y x square root of y. Then you can define the moment series and everything. And as you can see, square root of y, x square root of y is positive. Whenever x and y are positive. Okay, then Voigulescu showed in his paper in Journal of Operator Theory in 87 that the S-transform, he defined it a bit differently. This is the way that Nika and Speicher actually define it in combinatorial terms. But analytically speaking, this is totally equivalent to Voigulescu's original definition. So you take 1 over z times the inverse with respect to composition again of the R transform. Then this thing satisfies this relation f of x1, x2 equals f of x1, f of x2. Now there is, you know, you may want to consider n tuples. of random variables, and say this entuple is free from this entuple, and do the whole thing again for those entuples. There is one famous combinatorial method of Speicher, which uses the lattice of non-crossing partitions. I don't plan to talk about this now, but one can define R transform as a power series in non-commuting variables, and the R transform property still holds if instead of x1, x2, you have x1, 1, x1, 2, x1n, and x2, 1, x2, 2, x2n. And you try to add them together, and you're looking at point n. There is no F transform for several variables in a totally general setup, but there still is a way found by Michael Speicher to define a convenient operation which can characterize products of n coordinates. Okay, now finally the random matrix part. Now, Voiculescu's asymptotic freeness result, this comes, so in his first paper in 86, Voiculescu found also a central limit here for bounded random. And he found that the semicircle law happens to be the central limit. Well, much earlier, Wigner found this same law to be the limit of large self-adjoint of the distribution, the limit distribution of eigenvalues of large self-adjoint Gaussian random matrices with independent entries. It was a breakthrough in Inventiones in the 90s, in 1990 actually. Voiculescu showed in that paper that there is a very deep connection between these two facts. Namely, that if you take an independent bunch of such Gaussian random matrices with independent entries up to, of course, self-adjointness, and you take also a deterministic diagonal matrix with eigenvalues converge in distribution, then this whole bunch of matrices converges also in distribution as the size of the matrices tends to infinity to a bunch of free random variables, S1, Sk are semicircularly distributed, and D is just a self-adjoint random variable which has the limit distribution equal to which has a distribution equal to the limit distribution of Dn. Okay, now there is one special thing about this Gaussian random variable. Put a unitary on a Gaussian vector with independent entries, it remains a Gaussian vector with independent entries. Well, so you conjugate an An like that with Gaussian with unitary matrices, it remains the same thing. So Gaussian random matrix with independent. So, well, that also turned out to be a very deep fact. You can look at somehow a different perspective on freeness. Let's say that you take AN and BN to be real diagonal matrices, and their eigenvalues converge in distribution as the size n tends to. Well, for each n, pick UN a random unitary according to the R measure. Then it happens that AN and UN, BN, UN star, so this is deterministic, this is random now, are free in the limit, are asymptotically free. So you can think about this UN as taking the nicely aligned before eigenspaces of those two guys. Well, UN takes the eigenspaces of this guy and kicks them around in all directions, random.
So the semicircle law is known to hold in, you know, in very, very general cases, and I don't remember the most general assumptions that you need to have on the matrix to get the semicircle law. But
actually, I think this is the one.
Oh.
The most general.
Okay, well then, let's see if you can answer my question.
Okay, hopefully. So there are stronger results known. So
he's asking about non-Gaussian.
No, yeah. I'm referring to this. So this is okay. Maybe I could do it like this first. That's a different thing. No, we are talking about three different things. Okay, let me finish with this slide and maybe repeat that. Okay, so
Poulenc's theorem here talks about convergence in distribution. Now, I want to mention two strengthened results. First of Agrov and Torbjörnsen in 2005, they showed that this convergence is not only in distribution, but it's almost everywhere. So you represent those random variables on probability space, then outside a null set, if you take some non-commutative polynomial in those matrices, it will tend in norm to the non-commutative polynomial in semicircular distribution. Okay, and now Wigner matrix. So, if we are looking at a self-adjoint matrix again, with diagonal being formed of independent random variables, and real and imaginary part of diagonal, again, independent, all this independent, well, Wigner shows that actually this guy tends in the limit to the semicircular distribution. Now, it's a very recent result, just a few weeks ago, actually, of Capitaine, Donati, Martin, Ferral, and Tevrier, which considers... Yeah?
So in that statement, don't you need a little bit more? I mean, instead of just finite variants, you want finite moments? I mean, for Gaussians, would
over
be
here?
Fine, but...
you mean over here?
No, right above it.
Above? No.
Not there. Yes. Lower. This result due to 2005 results.
Yes.
Right. So
which is the upper.
And he says the Wigner matrix, if this is that, or are the entries with fixed finite variants.
I'm sorry. You know, this one should be a new line.
Oh.
So what's up there is for Gaussians.
Yes.
Gaussian
matrix. Gaussians, right.
This is for Wigner matrices over here. And actually, there is one thing that I'm not saying. This Wigner matrix has to satisfy a certain, a certain Poincaré inequality. I don't want to get into all the details. The point of this theorem, however, is that constant matrices, deterministic matrices, are asymptotically free almost, at least from the point of view of their spectrum, from such Wigner matrices properly modelized. And an important element in the proof of this result actually is Voiculescu's subordination theorem. I'm not planning to talk about it right now, but if there are any questions about that, I'll be happy to talk later. Okay, yeah.
So what is sigma?
This is the spectrum of MN.
Oh,
so MN is this self-adjoint matrix, which is random because this guy is random. Sigma of MN is the spectrum.
Okay.
And it says that when N is large enough, then the spectrum is included into an epsilon neighborhood of the support of the distribution of AN. And this guy is the semicircular distribution.
I see.
Wrong. So that guy up there.
Okay.
And
this needs more conditions.
This one needs a certain Poincaré inequality. If you have the first four moments finite for the entries four,
yeah,
then that's satisfied already.
Right.
But they need a bit less.
I guess something like this should hold for multiplication as well with a determinacy
over here. I don't know, and I haven't asked them. So the answer is I don't know.
Is it an open question?
I suppose it is. You know?
Okay. I thought there was
a result
similar to this by rules. No.
I don't know.
It's a multi-matrix. It's not a single matrix.
Okay.
It's a polynomial. It is work in progress, but this particular one is also, I think, is open.
So the conjectures that you said also are asymptotically free?
Those together.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to make one more game.
here is not just a asymptotic free, it's a convergence in norm.
Yes.
Well, the fact that all eigenvalues are close to the surface.
Yes. Okay. So, now, what about operator value trees?
Well, maybe not all entries of these random matrices are independent. And for the sake of making this notion somehow intuitive, let's take an example due to Rakhidikar or Abhibri and Speicher. 3x3 matrix of matrices. So A, B, and C, let's just say that they are not Wigner, but they are really Gaussian. And independent. We properly normalize this. Well, Orabi showed that this MN has a distributional limit for its eigenvalues without writing it down. Well, the four together found a way to actually compute this distribution, and the method uses operator value free probability introduced by Bodulescu again in 95. And what's the main idea here? You replace complex numbers with a subalgebra, which of course you call it of scalar, but that's just the name. This is an arbitrary C star subalgebra, for example, this. And phi, you replace it with a conditional expectation. You can think of it in probabilistic terms or in von Neumann algebra terms. Okay, then you can still define freeness exactly the same way. So you take again words like that, same condition of neighboring elements and not coming from the same algebra, and all of them have. And of course now elements x1, xn are free if the algebra they generate together with B, with a scalar, are free. Well, what are here distributions and moments? In the p-value case, the nth moment was phi of x to the power n. Convenient, because x commutes with the scalar. However, here, b is some algebra. Does not need to commute with x. So it's not so convenient. Now, to define moments, you want to encode the interaction between b's and x's inside this conditional expectation. So an nth moment here is n minus 1 linear functional on b into B. Okay. Now, look here. We have, so if we accept this correspondence, distribution equals collection of moments, which holds, for example, for compactly supported measures, random variables, everything compactly supported. So then the operator value distribution, look for comparison here. That's why I wrote this down. You can take again a kind of Cauchy-Stieger transform. We denote it here by bold V nu x. And you put the moments to be, well, symmetric moments over here, expressed like that. So this thing over here is this. The expression over here is this expression. And the expression over here is this expression. And with a bit of functional calculus, just analytic functional calculus, you can show that whenever imaginary part of B is strictly greater than zero, meaning greater than some epsilon times the unit, then B minus X here for self-adjoint X is inverted. This is the analytic theory behind operator value. Now, one of the claims is that this guy encodes all moments, not only the symmetric moments of X. Well, take derivative. Take the 21st derivative. That's 25 linear functional on from B to B, which is given exactly by putting holes in between. Okay, and there is
an operator valued R transform, which for the purposes of this talk can be defined like this. If B is of small norm, you can extend this guy from invertible B of small norm to all B of small norm. And again, if X and Y are 3 over B, then this guy over here holds for those operator values, operator values random variables 3 over B. Okay, now recall the random matrix example. What Rashidi Farr, Orabi, and Bridge found, Orabi, Bridge, and Spy have found, is that this guy tends in distribution to a 3x3 matrix value distribution, nu, with a property that the R transform, remember, this guy over here, is simply given by eta of B, where eta is a linear function from here to here, it happens to be also completely positive. It corresponds to the covariance. On the next slide, I'll show you exactly how this corresponds. And of course, let me first say that if you want to find the distribution lambda of eigenvalues of Mn, all what you need is take this G nu, evaluate it in complex numbers times the identity, and simply apply the Hilbert inversion formula to this G. So this means imaginary part. That's how they actually found the distribution. Okay, so now what eta is? Well, this is how it is. So you put this matrix of matrices times this one. You can view each of these deeds being multiplying the unit in the algebra in which this A lives, and this. Well, if you do your computation, you get this mantle over here. Okay, some limit theorem, finally. Oh, good question? 2 more minutes, okay. Now, the distribution that we've seen the previous time, well, it's exactly an operator valued central limit. In that case, on 3x3 matrix. The only known operator operator-valued limit theorem, according to at least my knowledge and my Potter's knowledge, is the semicircular, the central limit theorem, which is written exactly that. So you take center random variables of fixed variance, all of them identically distributed and free, then normalize properly, get a limit distribution. This limit distribution satisfies the condition that we know R transform equals variance of all those guys. Now, most general limit theorems are given in terms of infinitesimal triangular arrays, and in scalar valued classical and free probability, the limits are shown to be infinitely divisible. That's the infinite theorem. And for the free case, it's the theorem due to Berkovich and Pata, different strengths of the theorem up to the most general. Well, you can talk about infinite divisibility also for B-value random variables, and that was actually introduced by Schreier. It's the obvious thing. You can split it into a sum of N3 random variables for anything. Okay, now, recently, Popa and Vinnikov found a Levy-Hinchin formula which gives you the R transform of freely infinitely divisible distribution. And using this, we have obtained together a Hinchin type theorem. And I think maybe 15 seconds? Okay, thanks. So, okay, the point is, in this Hinchin type theorem, we take an array of triangular array of random variables. We put a fairly strong condition of infinitesimality, but that's because we want this B to be the most general part of this algebra. And then what we obtain is that if this triangular array has a distributional limit, then the distribution is necessarily free. Okay, these are the conclusions. I think I could just say that there are also other results obtained together with that one, and maybe stop here.
Questions?
Yes.
So is there a characterization of
all infinitely divisible bounded self-adjoint operator value kind of variables? Yes. This over here in terms of its arc transform.
Okay. And what is it? How is it related to the analog? So what explains the role of stable distributions? Or can one say
stable distributions within Joliet that far? The thing is that we are aware existence of two stable distributions, namely, you know, the Dirac measure and the semicircular law. Now, I have to say for finite dimensional algebra of scalars, results can be improved very much. And there is a reasonable chance that you would talk about other stable distributions. But that we don't know yet.
Questions? It's the second one here.